Mr. Pullen, reel 15.
Now, when you were in barracks, you could get shore leave regularly. You could get shore leave regularly.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Mm. When you left barracks to go on shore leave, were you inspected?
Inspected? Oh, yes, I'd been inspected. See.
What would happen exactly?
Well, just have a look to see if you was properly dressed and all that, see. And marched out and off you go to the station. Wherever you was going, you know, you go up to the railway station and they give you tickets, you know. We used to have a half-price ticket, see. Say the fare from Portsmouth to Bristol was 12 shillings. They paid 6 shillings of that for you, see.
But I mean shore leave in the evening when you'd be going into Portsmouth.
Oh, in the evening,
yeah.
Go ashore.
Yeah.
Well, we used to go. I've gone to a place called Vento's, Tuppence to go in. And they show you the play that night was a Face at the Window. And the other one was The Girl That Took the Wrong Turn In. Tuppence a time, you know, go in, sit there, you know, see? And all this would come on the stage, and I remember The Girl That Took the Wrong Turn In. A sailor comes home, look, see? He can't find his girl. And he says, "Where's Sophie?" He got a parrot in a cage, and he got his bag on his back, see? Oh, they said, "We don't know, she lost her. We believe she's gone to London." Then he's going to find her. And off he goes, and he goes to London, and he's passing through different places, and all at once you can see a silhouette on the curtains, you know, of a house. And he looks like Sophie, and knocks on the door and finds her. Brings her back home, you know, see? And she's been carrying on, but as a British tar, he ends up, you know, I forgive and forget and marry the girl that took the wrong turning. Then dunk on the street, and our evening was finished. Tuppence like, all night, all the evening, you know, going about 6, come out about 10, see? Then go back to the barracks.
What other sort of things would you do in Portsmouth? When you were on shore leave?
Well, I've walked round. What I used to do, you know, I was a very great chap for antiques. And I used to visit all the pawn shops in Portsmouth. If I see something there that I could buy, I had the money, I'd buy it. And I bought quite a lot of stuff, you know, see.
Where did most of the... What were the common places where the sailors who were on shore leave in Portsmouth used to congregate together?
Well, Sunday nights they used to go to the Clarence Pier. Whatever for, I don't know, but we'd sit there and they'd all be walking around that way and these walking around that way, girls and chaps. But I think they go there to look for their girls, you know, see?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think about it. And of course, we could always go in the sailor's rest, you know, have a bath for threepence, have a bed for threepence, nice clean bed. And in the morning, we have a nice big cup of tea, large cup of tea, and a bun, you know, penny bun, cup of tea, penny. And that was kept by a woman called Agnes Weston. You ever heard about that?
Yeah.
She kept that place. She had 3 places, one at Chatham, one at Plymouth, and one in Portland. She had about 40 beds at Portland, I see.
What did you think of Aggie Weston's home?
I thought she was a wonderful person, really. I've talked to her, you know.
Have you?
Yes, and Miss Wince was her friend. And I've talked to her. I introduced my wife to him.
How did you come to meet Aggie Weston?
Well, I went in the sailor's rest one day, see. And she was there. And she said that, you know where the petty officer's room is? The room for petty officers, see. But previous to all that, from the training ship, we always went to Aggie Weston's for our last meal. You know what they call a tea fight. Well, while we were there, she told us her life, you know. She said her father was a clergyman. They lived at Bath. And she said he took her to Plymouth on holiday. And she said she never seen such disgraceful things that was going on among the sailors, drunk and all that, see. On the way home, she said to her father, "Can't we do something about it?" He said, "No, they're the scum of the earth. You couldn't do nothing with them, see." Well, you know, we were noted of that, see, us and the soldiers, because they thought that was the last results in life, you see. However, she said, I made up my mind at 18 that I would go there and do something. So she said, I booked a room, and I went out and I found a sailor with a beard, drunk, took him in. He said, even then and then, he put his hand up my clothes. See? And from that, she said, I worked it up. And when they come to find out, men with money used to give her enormous money. The Japanese gave her enormous money, you know. Any sailor could put up in there, see? It wasn't like the Merchant Navy. Merchant Navy had what they call a flying angel. But the Aggie Weston, so they knew Aggie Weston, they'd be up there. Mm. You always have a good meal for a shilling there.
Now, there were other rest homes in Portsmouth in addition to Aggie Weston's. What weren't there?
Yeah, that was the, what they called the home, sailor's home. That wasn't so clean or so nice. Aggie Weston's always kept it nice, you know. It was always a nice place to go in, and you had two would sit that side, two sit sides, a table. And the girls, all mostly the girls, is usually widows of men who's been sunk in submarines and all that. Always looking for a new husband.
Did you ever sign the pledge in Aggie Weston?
Yes, I did. And
now,
I got a.
Now, how did that happen?
Well, we used to get a man called Cater to come on board in the dinner hour. And he used to bring what they call a book called A Shore and Afloat. And another little book about Aggie Weston, visiting the sailors' homes and all that, see. And he sit down and trying to convince you about being rums, you know, and all that, see, to be a teetotaler. Then if you were a teetotaler for so long, they give you medals, you know, see. So I signed the pledge, just to satisfy him, see. And of course, blokes used to pull his leg when he come on board.
In what sort of way?
Say, I'll bet you has a good dose of beer when you're out there, you know. I'll bet so-and-so. Oh, no, I never touch it. I had these men walking around, see. Now, time came when I was a skipper of the floating bridge. I'll go back again on that. Some dark man got out of his car, and he came to me and he said, I believe you've been in the Navy. I said, yes, I have. My daughter'd like to speak to you. Now, he'd been a missionary abroad. I went over to her. I said, do you want to see me? She was a nice-looking person, rather young. She said, yes. She said, did you ever know Miss Weston? I said, yes, she's kissed me. She kissed all us boys after the tea fight, you know. Nothing much in that, is there, you know, see? She said something about the Blarney Stone then, see? Oh, I said, it's true. Well, she said, I got her a job now in Plymouth. She said, and I want you to come and help me. Oh, no. She said, I'll pay you well. I said, how much? She said, well, you have your bed there and all that. 30 shillings a week. Oh, no, I said, I'm getting £3 a week here. Skipper of that floating bridge. This is just before the war broke out.
The Second War.
Second War.
Yeah.
And I never went with her. But another time her sister came up, dressed up like a... Oh, like anyhow, you know, looking very nice.
Yeah, was Aggie Weston and her home... Was Aggie Weston popular with the sailors?
Yes, she was with all the sailors. I think every sailor liked her except the Portsmouth sailors, because they always had their homes to go to. But it was a home from home for us.
Why didn't the Portsmouth sailors like her?
Well, I put prejudice like everything else.
How do you mean?
Well, I suppose, you see, but they heard the sailors talking about going to the sailors' rest, see? Perhaps some of them kept places where they could supply you with a bit of food for a few bob a week,
see? I would I was thinking that maybe as most sailors drank a lot, they might have got a bit fed up with Aggie Weston when there are pledges.
Yes, that's what that, yeah, you've got it right there. That's how it seemed to me at times there, see. Yet all sailors that I knew, well, I'll say 90% of the Navy and all the sailors, Marines and all, admired her a lot. She was really, oh, I suppose, a great mouthpiece really for everybody. Nice person. She always looked to me an old granny with a shawl over her shoulder last time I saw her. Then Sundays, she could go in there Sundays after dinner, go in the church. Then some sailors would get up and preach, you know, see? And some sailors would tell you how they got on since they looked up to the Lord and all this, you know, what goes on to him. Like it is today with them, see? Mm-hmm. And it was a sort of a free-for-all. Home from home, see, somewhere to go in the Sunday afternoon. And sometimes in the early morning, we go down and watch the Marines come out of church. If we slept in Sailor's Rest, we'd book a bed for Saturday and Sunday, see.
Mm. Now, you've mentioned Aggie Weston's, and you've mentioned the theatre, and you've mentioned Clarence Pier. What else would sailors do in Portsmouth at this time before the war?
Nothing no more than watching the Marines come out of church of a Sunday morning.
Well, what about pubs and women and things like
pubs, there are plenty of pubs there, always full of sailors and prostitutes. Prostitutes galore there. You couldn't go to the barracks, be what one woman wasn't saying. Well, a short time, Jack, see? Or you could sleep with her for $5 for the week, night, see? With all that going on, look, see?
Well, where did sailors meet women usually? Where was the most common meeting place?
Yeah, well, sometimes in the pubs, sometimes in the streets going back at night in the barracks. And, of course, there was a great deal of VD amongst the sailors and syphilis. And in 1920... I was in the Swiss Shore, and this is where a new change took place. Instead of having that tub of water to wash in, every man had to have his own bowl of water to wash in. That's the washing, see? Of course, we had a bathroom in there, see? And what happened now, we had a man on board, a stoker, named Dunk, I remember. He was a married man with two children, and he had syphilis. All our surgeons was called home, could be spared, because a Japanese officer, a doctor, had invented a new thing to cure syphilis. Now, we were always taught on board ship about this venereal and syphilis, what it meant. If you got married with venereal disease, children were born with big heads. And if it was syphilis, it destroyed people with syphilis. There's no cure for syphilis. You should start in the mouth, see, the roof of the mouth would fall. Well, these officers, doctors was called home for this, to go through a course of this business, what they call a 6-halt-6 treatment.
A what?
6-halt-6 treatment.
6-halt-6.
You ever heard of it?
What was that?
That was the invention by this Japanese doctor to cure syphilis. But previous to this, at the lectures we used to have, all men over 21, you'd have to go to lectures on board, and the surgeon would have you around the blackboard, see? And he'd tell you what syphilis was, and he used to kill a cockroach on the blackboard and put a couple more cockroaches there, and they'd eat that cockroach. He said, that's syphilis. He said, and if you want to know what syphilis is, in the Bible it says, the wages of sin is death. Now, they destroyed every man that had syphilis right up to 1909. That's when our doctors come out, and our doctors, that Dunk that had syphilis, he had to pay 10 shillings and sign a sort of a death certificate, you know. And they had him, they treated him with this. And you know, men was up all hours at night wondering how he was getting on. They said, now a fever's come over him. They got to cure that fever. Finally, he got through it. And that was the beginning of the cure for syphilis.
Did you learn what 6-Holt-6 treatment was?
Oh, no.
You didn't?
No, only doctors know what that is, see? The issues of that now in the syphilis, see?
Now,